You are listening to a sermon by Barbara Nickel, recorded on Sunday, November 10th, 2013, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The recording has been truncated for privacy reasons. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Good morning. I am so happy to be here. Thank you for continuing to invite me back and for giving me the opportunity to share my ideas. And as Henry, as Henry Neufeld once put it, my experiments. With you. I am especially happy to be here on Peace Sunday, and I was thinking as we were singing, there's a lot of things I miss about this congregation, but one of the things I especially miss is the singing. And it's always wonderful for me to come back and to sing with you. So thank you so much. So, as Janice mentioned, I bring you this peace candle from Emmanuel Mennonite, and also greetings from Pastor April Yamasaki and the congregation. Consider the phrase made by the writer of the text we sang earlier, put peace into each other's hands. One of the things I like about that is that it takes the large abstract concept of peace and grounds it in two parts of the body that are indispensable to most people every day for cooking and eating and drinking and working and washing and reading and typing and opening and closing and playing and driving. I started making this list and I couldn't stop. And writing. The list goes on and on. But how do we actually put peace into each other's hands? I invite you to explore this question with me in both a large public arena and also on a more private and smaller scale. Imagine a cold, clear, moonlit November night, almost 73 years ago, November 14th, 1940. The German Luftwaffe have chosen the city of Coventry, England, as its particular target, arguably because of all of that city's military factories. Normally, in the colder months, the city is blanketed in fog. But the Germans have planned this attack for the full moon and actually have nicknamed it Operation Moonlight Sonata. And tonight, for some reason, the fog has disappeared, allowing for a perfectly clear target. Imagine the sound of over 400 bombers leveling a city for 13 hours. And the fires, so intense, they could be seen from 100 miles away. Over 500 lives lost, 75% of all the buildings destroyed, people cut off from water, gas, electricity, communication. The morale of a city, and indeed of a country, collapsed. The beloved medieval cathedral, St. Michael's, burns with the city. And on the morning of November 15th, lies in ruins. Imagine that morning. Thin sun, and the eerie silence that follows great destruction. And there was a man named Jock Forbes, the cathedral stonemason. He surveys the rubble and notices something. Two of the charred roof timbers have fallen in the shape of a cross. This cross is later lifted onto an altar of rubble. And the provost of the time, Richard Howard, who was a man with a vision for peace and not revenge, has the words, "Father, forgive," etched on the wall behind the altar of the ruined cathedral. It seems to me that the courage of that act, amidst the complete collapse of one's own world, to find in the rubble an image of Christ, to lift that image up, and to etch the words of peace Christ spoke, "Father, forgive," as he was dying on the cross, for the world and the enemy to see. That kind of courage is only possible by turning to God in the midst of the ruins and by saying, "Lord, our own strength is at an end. Lord, grant us your peace." If we could sing just a little bit of that, the Dona Nobis Pacem again, the Tese. After the bombing, the day after, the decision is already made to build a new cathedral in the spirit of hope for the future. The following month, on Christmas Day, 1940, Provost Howard gives a sermon of reconciliation, which is broadcast to the nation from the ruins of Coventry Cathedral. And the congregation continues to worship in its crypt. And 5 years later, encouraged by the spirit of reconciliation, the people of Coventry send labor and aid to German cities also leveled by the war. 26 years after the bombing, in May 1962, a new cathedral is consecrated. The ruins have been kept. The architect has designed the cathedral so that the new arises from the remains of the old. To quote from Coventry Cathedral's website, the ruins remain hallowed ground, and together the two create one living cathedral. So now, if you can't take a flight over there, you can actually go on to the cathedral's website and you can take a virtual tour with the aid of a map complete with this little bouncing ball that bounces up and down to tell you where in the cathedral you are. So you click on the bouncing ball and you find yourself in St. Michael's Porch, which allows you to travel from the new cathedral to the old. And then you click on another bouncing ball and you're in the nave of the old cathedral, which is now like an open-air courtyard with benches. And from there you can look to the apse and view the details of window frames that once held stained glass and now hold sky. You can stand before the altar with the burned cross and the inscription on the old wall with Christ's words, "Father, forgive." Today, Coventry Cathedral has become a world center for peace and reconciliation. Every weekday at noon, in the new cathedral and in the ruins on Fridays, this litany of reconciliation is said, and you can find it in your bulletins, and I invite you to read it with me. I'll read the light print, and you can read the dark together. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. The hatred which divides nation from nation, race from race, class from class.
Father, forgive.
The covetous desires of people and nations to possess what is not their own.
Father, forgive.
The greed which exploits the work of human hands and lays waste the earth.
Father, forgive.
Our envy of the welfare and happiness of others.
Father, forgive.
Our indifference to the plight of the imprisoned, the homeless, the refugee.
Father, forgive.
Lust which dishonors the bodies of men, women, and children.
Father, forgive.
The pride which leads us to trust in ourselves and not in God.
Father, forgive.
Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you. Put peace into each other's hands. Peace put into our hands today. Into many hands from across the Atlantic, from across the decades, from an event played out in the very public and large arena of World War II. But what about peace in smaller places and in more private arenas? Places that actually can't be accessed by a website. In the quiet of a room. In the stillness or turbulence of a heart. The first verse of "Put peace into each other's hands" likens peace to a candle flame. Something small enough to hold in your hand. I invite you to sing the first verse with me again of "Put peace into each other's hands," number 87 in Sing the Journey. Peace as a candle flame, mysterious, flickering with questions. Why did the blanket of fog normally covering Coventry lift on the precise night of the Germans' planned invasion? Full moon and clear skies so that hundreds of people, innocent people, died. How can a good God allow such a suffering of innocence in you choose a war, a country, a time? How can such a God exist? Why did cancer attack this mother, grandmother, sister, wife, friend, so that she dies in a hospice at such a young age? Why? We ask from the rubble of our lives, from the trenches of our hearts. Every life has a war in it.